We're back to Taylor Report, CIUT 9.5 FM. You can write to us, taylor@ciut.fm. We're on Facebook / Taylor, The Taylor Report, pardon me. And joining us now is Mike Hirsch of the United Steelworkers. He was the president of the very famous Toronto local steelworkers, the John Inglis plant, where he worked with a terrific woman and union fighter and NDP militant, Bev Brown, who has died this past Thursday. There, Mike.
Hey, Phil.
Mike, she has a title called the First Woman of Steel.
Bev was the original Woman of Steel. She and Mary Spratt from my local, Local 2900 was the oldest local of the steelworkers in Toronto. It was chartered in 1940. I'm staring at it here right now, 1943.
Also the home local of Lynn Williams.
Williams, who just passed away as well, actually, just a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we had the first women's committee of the Steelworkers Union, actually, back in the early 80s, 81, I think.
The first one was in early 80s.
That's right. And that's really 8 to 10 years before Women of Steel actually was formed. But we had a women's committee, and they had plenty of issues to deal with at the plant.
Tell us what those were. What made it necessary to and seemed advisable to form this committee?
Well, the company did not want to bring women into certain departments and positions, like press operators. There was a time in the late 60s where they didn't want any women to work on the assembly line.
I shouldn't ask why they would think that. Would they think,
you know,
I know that women aboard a ship will sink it. That was one theory. Then if you were in a coal mine, the mine would collapse. So what was going to happen on an assembly line?
And, you know, the truth, of course, is that women's hand and eye coordination and everything else made them far better operators than most of the men on the line. But in any case, we had to grieve every woman getting into a forklift job, a crane job, the press operator.
You had to do it by way of grievance.
We had to do a grievance. That was one reason to have a women's committee. And then we wanted to get women active in the union because women comprised about 30%, maybe a third, of all the people in the plant. At the time, there was when I started in the 60s, there were 1,200, and there was about 850 when Bev started in 1976, actually. And so we formed a women's committee, we got a lot of women involved in the union, and a lot of women became stewards. It's interesting. I was just thinking about it. The department that didn't want women, the foreman Bruce Morton, would not allow women in, and the first woman lead hand in the whole plant, Kathy Cormier, came out of his department, which is only fitting that the first woman would come from his department. So he not only let women in, he had women run the place.
Yeah.
And Bev was instrumental in organizing the women's committee, so that when Leo Girard set up the women's committee in District 6. He hired Michael Lewis to do that, and the people they brought in to teach the first women of steel included Bev Brown and Mary Spratt, and so they trained them on how to set up a women's committee, and that was 8 to 10 years after we'd already set one up. So that's why she was the original woman of steel, she and Mary Spratt. And Bev came out of the rubber works before she worked at Inglis, and she used to tell me she went to rubber workers conventions where she was the only woman out of 1,000 people. She was the only woman there. I mean, this is a pioneer here we're talking about.
By the way, you know, your local, the Inglis local, has been written about. The films, the documentary films have been made.
Yep.
Is Bev in those?
Oh, Bev is all over them. Actually, she's in the book. She's in the video. Bev is.
Well, really
she was vice president of the local. She was a chief steward. And she was vice president of the local when I was president.
Well, tell me, let's talk about what were her qualities. What made her into? It's one thing to be a successful, you know, to be able to do the job in a industrial plant. But what was she like as a leader?
She was compassionate. She was genuine. There was no bullshit. She was everything she would say would be exactly the way she saw it, and she was just she was a compassionate, wonderful person, very smart, and everyone loved her. Actually, I was definitely mentoring her to become the next president.
I have to remember, I loved her myself. She's great.
Yeah, no, Bev
she was a supporter, of our program.
The other thing about Bev and I is that music was very much a part of Local 2900, and Bev was a country western singer. She used to perform. And then she and I used to perform at all the when Dave Patterson was the director of District 6 of the Steelworks. We used to perform at all the conferences. Mm-hmm. And Bev used to sing at the international convention. She'd sing "O Canada" at representing Canada. I forgot that, but she used to do that as well. But there's one story of Bev. We had a wildcat strike in 1981, and 250 people were marching through the plant. The issue was around the company failing to give us sub pay, and the 250. Yeah, I mean, you got a picture. This is a line. Not only does the line go down and people stop at their tools, they actually march through the plant, and then on the loudspeaker, while people were marching, Bev goes on and starts singing "Solidarity Forever."
Oh, boy.
And so the whole these 250 people started singing "Solidarity Forever" through the plant, with Bev leading the way on the loudspeaker for the whole plant to hear. That's not an everyday occurrence in the workplace.
It happens in occasional movie.
Yeah, really. I mean, Bev was. I don't know how she got on the. You know, she must have known how to get on the line. The rest of us didn't know how to do that, but she could do that.
Yeah. Well, by the way, now you say she sang and all that. Was she part of some? There were some recordings made. Did she participate in some of the?
She didn't do that because when we started, there's a karaoke of Union Song, and she really had trouble. She was on oxygen for the last 5 years of her life,
uh-huh.
And so we tried to sing. Miner's Life at we had a local 2900 reunion and we're going to have another one actually this November, and we tried to get her to sing and she really had a lot of trouble. She couldn't breathe.
Yeah.
And so so when we did that karaoke, she was having problems then, so she's not on the CD.
She's when you have that reunion, I assume there will be a huge picture of Bev Brown.
There will be. We lost a few. We lost Lynn Williams. Bev is very important. We lost Jack Hill, who was the president of our local before I was. And I mean, we lost some really important people over the last few years, and Bev mm-hmm. stands up amongst mm-hmm. them.
Yeah, well, I'm sure glad we have a chance to remember her. And as a matter of fact, what you're telling me, is, for at least for the Taylor Report, we'd like to follow up on some of those stories, like the story of her leading people through the plant singing "Solidarity Forever." My gosh, that would be a chapter, how that occurred. And, of course, also the formation of the First Women's Committee. I hope steelworkers will make sure that when they put together, when they're having conventions and whatnot, there may be a chapter about Bev Brown. Mike, what about, she died on Thursday, and where will she be buried?
She's going to be buried in Bob Cajun. There's a funeral celebration of her life at 1 o'clock at Monk Funeral Services in Bob Cajun. And she lived in Little Britain, which is just south of Bob Cajun. Mm-hmm. And it's this Thursday, June 5th at 1 o'clock,
mm-hmm.
and there'll be a lot of it'll be family and NDPers and a lot of union people, a lot of English people.
Yeah,
and it's going to be filled with music and I just got a letter here from Ken Newman, and Leo just is sending a letter now actually.
Mm-hmm.
Leo Gerard is the international president of the Steelworkers, and he says that. He was a very close friend of Bev, and he's going to be sending something soon.
Yeah. Well, Bev Brown, is, in terms of memory and contribution, is going to be, she has a great future ahead of her, actually. People are going to want to learn more about her. She was an outstanding person. We sure appreciated her being a supporter of ours. So, Mike
Hirsch, she contributed to your program, too.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Yes, she did. And I seen her. Didn't she come into the? I can't remember if she was in the studio when we were remembering Peter Leavage.
No, she wasn't.
She wasn't able. She wasn't
she
able to.
She wasn't mobile, actually.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Mike, we appreciate you sharing all that with us. It tells me that there's a big, big story there about Bev Brown, the first woman in steel. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Yeah. Now get out.
Okay.
Mike Hirsch. And that's local 2900. If you don't know, that was a legendary local. It's now disappeared from the map. I think it was a housing apartment complex here now. And Phil, you're looking
like... Yeah, I do remember
Phil Conlon, by the way.
Some time ago that Bev came to the program for one reason. I think that they came and sang once, many, many years ago.
Yeah.
But I think we actually had a little tune right here in the studio. It's a long time ago, but I think Bev was part of that.
That was probably when we were in the building that we all... It was sort of like you had to check the timbers to make sure it was okay to go into the building. We had a bird.
There were holes in the floor, right?
Yeah, we had a canary in the doorway, and if the canary took off, we all were ready to fly along. You're listening to the Taylor Report. By the way, that was the voice of Phil Conlon. Phil Conlon's program, Classical Underground, is each Wednesday at 6 p.m.
Wednesday at 6 o'clock, yes, and we are... everything is now up and running on the CIUT website for us at Wednesday at 6, and you can listen to our program of last Wednesday where we interviewed a professional singer and went over the issues around some British opera critics who like to verbally abuse singers in this particular
case. The name of the singer is what?
Is Tara Arrott. She's a young opera singer from Ireland. And they didn't like what she looked like. Yeah. Not what she sounded like, what she looked like in a production in Glyndebourne. So one guy said that she wouldn't even do as a scullery maid, which is the one that really stuck with me. That's it.
So that's when you want to walk over to him and say, you have a scullery maid. You want to elaborate?
Yeah, how would you know what a scullery maid looks like, buddy?
Yeah. No, talk about, you know, a lot of people intellectually have not left several centuries ago, and they're very proud of it. But I'm really glad you did. So you did this?
Or we did this show past Wednesday, and it's on the website, and I urge people who didn't get to hear the show to go listen to it.
And will that, by the way, be an ongoing issue? Has there been any... By the way, there's nothing wrong with people getting and saying, you know, your guy has got to make a formal apology, or your paper, or whoever published it.
Well, the singer I interviewed, Catherine Keene, she said she only wishes that there had been the internet and social media 20 years ago, but when she was young, because she says actually women singers deal with this kind of stuff all the time. What's different now is that somebody jumps on Facebook or Twitter and says, "Hey, you can't say that," and then all of a sudden it becomes an international discussion. Yes. But there are it's not uncommon actually for an upcoming singer to have their career destroyed. Because some snotty director gets very personal and very ugly in describing them. You know, I tend to when I go...
Well, but here, this has another issue. Yeah. This involves Irish.
Well, yes, I think I mean, it does.
We can't... I don't think... Yeah, I would say, you know, for one thing, if as her advocate, I'd say, let's go through this guy's commentary on other people. Yeah. Why did he pick out an Irish woman...
To make that particular comment.
To make this kind of comment. Yeah. Did he ever make it in relation to anybody of his own class and neighborhood? often you'll find there's always been that little over the line, that reaching that comes from people in centers of empires kind of think they can do that. It's somehow funny. They can talk about the subject peoples.
Well, and you know, when literary critics do this, and a literary critic can say something really nasty about a writer, but you see, the writer can always say something nasty back. It's more of a better chance of a fair fight. But what's a singer supposed to do? You know, they're paid to give a performance. All they can do is sing, right? Yeah. Their profession, their skill isn't in coming back with clever one-liners to...
but also, by the way, they don't decide which parts. They agree to take a part if offered.
They agree to take a part, and they agree to take the stage director and whatever interpretation
and whatever
he
has. The costumes are. They're not
right. They're not the costume director, absolutely. Yeah. That's a very important point.
Yeah. Well, of course, this is why Brendan Behan always referred to himself as a British object.
Brendan, boy, they never got the last word on him.
No. Borstal Boy, I recommend it. You're listening to the Taylor Report. It is CIUT. It's 89.5 FM.